Hi, this is Paula Morrell, and welcome to the Tales from the South podcast. I hear it when
you do. You don't have to tell me that you love me, but I sure like to hear it when you do. You don't have to tell me that you love me, but I sure like to hear it when you do.
How's everybody doing tonight? So how about tonight's music by Ratliff Dean Tebow? Do y'all like Dean? Among other things, Dean plays with the recently formed Diesel Dean and the 18-Wheelers and the acclaimed Mountain Sprout. More can be found at mountainsprout.com. All right, well, welcome to Tales from the South, where Southerners bring their own true stories to life. We are on the road and on location at the Main Stage Creative Community Center in downtown Eureka Springs, Arkansas. Tales from the South is presented by William F. Lehman Public Library, and I'm your host, Paula Martin Morrell. What do y'all think about our set back here? Y'all like our set? When we go on the road, we bring our regular set pieces, and then we also feature an artist from the area. So tonight's featured artist is Eureka Springs artist John Willer with these two pieces right here. Which are for sale. Our listeners can find out more about these pieces and John at our website, talesfromthesouth.com. All right, are y'all ready for some Southern style storytelling? Tonight, our storytellers are all from up here in Northwest Arkansas and recount tales that made them think, "Surely you jest." All stories are true and told by the Southerners who lived them. Later tonight, David Franks takes us back to elementary school and a line that is still incredulous 50 years later. And we'll end the night with Vicky Penny, some Novocaine, and a double take. But let's start the night here at Tales from the South with Pamela Lee Hill as she races to get the job done and confusion ensues in Unbridled.
Estimate the time you'll need to do a thing, and then double it, my mother used to say. I could hear her words clear as day as I sped down the road, possibly because she felt the need to repeat them so often for my own personal edification. But they rarely do any good, generally because I seldom see the need to do as she suggested until it's far too late to be done. Now the light was waning into eve, late on a Sunday afternoon. Many places were closed, and I was in quite the fix. I live a ways out of town in the lovely hardwood forested region east of Fayetteville, so I tend to consolidate town day activities to save on time and gasoline. On days prior to town day, I carefully construct lengthy to-do lists, complete with bring this items like grocery bags, water bottles, the cooler for ice. Such meticulous planning, however, doesn't always square well with my temperament, which is prone to much wandering of the mind. I become fatigued by the concentration that lists of lists requires, so by the time I'm ready to leave for town, sometimes it's nearly time to return. Especially on Sundays, when I reserve the right to wander unbridled. It was such a Sunday afternoon as this when I was speeding into town to MC a women's open mic event called Howl, which occurs monthly at Nightbird Books on Dixon Street in Fayetteville. True to form, the ink in my printer was low and my notes were on my laptop, so I was going to have to find a place to print quickly. Why did I let my mind wander on Google searching for mushroom catalogs? I harangued. I've been wanting to learn to grow shiitake and morels like people do on stacked oaken logs, but it could have waited. I tried the public library, but their printers already were turned off for the day. Friendly advice from the staff pointed me in the direction of the FedEx office store. She even pulled their phone number from the local directory. "You call and see if they're open," she said. Most thankfully, they were. I scurried to my car and sped to the store, burst in the door with a laptop in hand, and froze. Will that machine work on a Mac? Do I have the right cord, or port, or whatever they're called? I spied a young man with a FedEx name tag. He stood with an amazingly kind and placid look on his face while patiently tending the petitions of a gaggle of customers who looked just as harried as I. I stood bewildered and quiet next to a very large copy machine, facing the young man's direction from several yards away with my best, "I am lost, please help me next, I hope that soon," look on my face. He interpreted well and came quickly to my rescue, pointing me towards neatly printed instructions at one of the workstations, which of course did not work for my computer, so I collared him again and we found other options, which to my relief met with great success. I now had the needed copies, 5 pages black and white, and I hurried to the counter to pay for them. "That'll come to, he paused as he checked the register, $267, which I interpreted as $2.67, as opposed to T-O, just 67 cents. And since I rarely frequent copy centers and I'm not acquainted with the cost of printing services, I reached into my purse and retrieved 2 $1 bills and set them on the counter, proceeding to search the pockets of my purse for another 67 cents. Meanwhile, the young man took the $2 and held them gingerly aloft with somewhat of a confused look on his face, which I interpreted as him asking, "This is only $2, where's the 67 cents? Of course, that's not what he meant at all, but rather, "What are you giving me this for? The charge is only 67 cents. But since, in my confusion, I had not yet realized my mistake, I audibly replied, "You keep that," meaning, "Just hang on, I'm looking for the other 67 cents. Which I carefully extracted from my purse, as I am an exact change kind of person, and handed to him. Well, being the dutiful please customers at all costs, or advances, type of employee, he dropped the change into the register and with a wan smile, courteously left the $2 bills on the counter. But I was in too much of a hurry to wonder about that and headed for the door. While doing so, I felt the impressive heft of the copy paper and also its high gloss, which must account for the price, I thought, for $2.67 does seem a tad high for 5 black and white printouts. I was halfway across the parking lot when it finally hit me like a speeding car. Duh, he meant 67 cents, not 267, and I just gave the young man a tip, and he's not exactly sure why. By then, I was beginning to laugh uncontrollably and realized that while leaving tips for young men at copy counters is unconventional behavior, at least in Fayetteville, Arkansas, he's gonna keep it because by now I'm way too embarrassed to return. And our errant miscommunications are way too tangled to straighten out now. I drove away in a grin and incredulous as one who enjoys communication of words on my merry way to a literary event featuring her words out loud, which I realized most of mine weren't in this situation. I could not believe that nearly 5 times in a sequential row, emphasis on sequential, that the firing of our communication transmitters in the copy store wholly missed their intended targets in the neurocenters of our brains. So I turned it into a kind of story, a reminder of sorts. First, of the impeccable service available at this particular FedEx location. And well, in the future, if I really do double the amount of time available to visit the store, the price of copies may decrease dramatically.
Pamela Lee Hill lives in the beautiful Ozark Mountains on her beloved land called Whisperwood, where she gardens, writes, and is building her own straw bale house. More can be found at onewhisperwoodway.blogspot.com. Next on Tales from the South, it's a line you may only hear once in a lifetime that David Frank still remembers in It's All Fun and Games.
Disclosure. In the interest of accuracy, I must report that I was neither delighted nor shouting. I was disinclined and rather bored. I spent the day wandering around, watching events at random, chatting with teachers. I had about as many friends among the teachers as among the students, and the other kids were officially busy, and lamenting the fact that the school library was not open. If I participated in any events, I don't remember it. There are the nerdy, and there are the morbidly nerdy. Oh, we were having a field day. Really, we were having a field day. Each spring, studies would be cast to the winds, and students, faculty, administration, the nurse, and conscientious parents of Oakland Heights Elementary School would repair to the Windy Playground for a day of good old, exceptional American youthful physical activity. President Kennedy himself must have been smiling down on us from a cloud. My parents, I will note, were not of the type of conscientiousness that led to volunteering at field day, though my father had helped to install the playground equipment when the school was built, and my mother occasionally showed up to meet extra needs in the classroom. My parents were more provide fodder for the schools conscientious. They certainly got their money's worth out of their public school taxes. And from time to time, they would assist our beleaguered educators by pulling my older, younger brother and me out of class for a day and taking us for picnics and long drives on the back roads of Pope County and the surrounding region. I still have some interesting rocks and fossils we found on those trips, somewhere. I should tell you that even Tommy Wade was having a field day. I would have warned you about Tommy Wade those nearly 50 years ago. Tommy, through birth or accident, was missing his right hand and right foot. When I first attended Oakland Heights, he would menace the first and second graders, either with the rounded end of his right arm, or more menacingly, with the mechanical claw that he sometimes came to school equipped with. However, each year he ceased to be novel to the new students and became just another minor threat among the multitude of minor threats that elementary school had to offer. I don't know if he created other problems while he was at it, but I suspect that he always had a little trouble relating to other people. Anyway, his missing hand was the main thing. His missing foot, on the other hand, was never a particular issue to the younger students, as he wore a prosthetic foot, which was made rather like a knee-high boot and was not at all menacing even when he wore shorts to school. Ah, field day. Out on the playgrounds, there were push-ups, pull-ups, chin-ups, jumping jacks, tossing, throwing, heaving, casting, hurling, and putting. There were all kinds of races to run and all kinds of jumps to attempt. In a small courtyard formed by a U in the building plan and facing the east playground, the nerve center of the undertaking was set up. There was an awards table tended by the principal and a couple of teachers, where the results of the events were collected and noted, and ribbons, certificates, accolades, citations, attaboys, and so on were distributed. The nurse sat nearby just in case, as these were the good old days and kids were stronger, faster, meaner, leaner, and tougher back then, there weren't any cases to speak of. And there was a table with a boxy public address system manned by a few parents whose conscientiousness ran to public address, not including my father, oddly enough. A couple of bullhorn-like speakers on a pole marked its location. The pole was tall enough to keep the announcements from causing permanent hearing loss to the people nearby. There also was a limited cornucopia of snacks available for purchase at a table in the courtyard manned by sixth graders. This was actually a fixture of our Oakland Heights experience. The school had a folding table, a cash box, a sliding top chest freezer, and apparently a contract with a local candy distributor. On sunny days throughout the school year, candy, such as atomic fireballs, lemon heads, and Boston baked beans, and frozen treats, for example, fudgesicles, banana fudgesicles, and appropriately enough, push-ups, were offered for sale after lunch under the school's front portico. A small coterie of sixth graders was allowed to run the sales, which raised money for the PTA. I so looked forward to being a sixth grader. The delighted shouts of the other students echoed off the surrounding suburban homes, mingling with more echoey PA announcements of impending events and the results of various heats. Even in April, heat was an appropriate word to use for any outdoor physical activity. My appreciation for heat is more in keeping with an indolent cat than with someone who perseveres in spite of it. Early in the afternoon, fifth graders were called to the broad jump area, a shallow linear pit filled with a layer of sand, overseen by a couple of adults, including a conscientious parent with a tape measure. Among the lined up fifth graders was Tommy Wade, who, while waiting in line, removed his shoes, socks, and pedal prosthetic and set them aside. His prosthetic foot had no tarsal articulation, so he couldn't run well with it on. I happened to be nearby, and I decided that this would be worth watching. Tommy Wade being more one of the guys than I ever was. Tommy's turn came. He traversed the approach and made a creditable showing, landing well along in the sand. Apparently, the underlying principle of the broad jump is to land falling forward, not backward. After being told his distance, he left the area and the fifth grade broad jumping continued. Eventually, the fifth graders finished the broad jump and somebody finally noticed that Tommy had left his footwear and a foot at the pit. A conscientious parent took these abandoned items to the courtyard for disposition by the authorities. Having nothing better to do and being interested in the shade offered by the school building, I followed. He set the lost and subsequently found items on the table with the PA equipment, thinking it a likely place for a lost and found. The parents at the PA table had no idea who these things belonged to, and they sat unclaimed for some while. After that while, one of the sixth graders from the ice cream and candy table saw them, knew who they belonged to, and knew what to do. He squared his shoulders, went over to the PA system, and took the microphone. Tommy Wade, please come get your leg. For a few seconds, the only sounds were the chirping birds and the leftover echoes of the announcement off the suburban surroundings, as all other activities seemed to come to a dead stop. But it was a beautiful spring day, the juices were flowing, and it was only those few seconds before the field day activities went on as before. And before too much longer, Tommy Wade retrieved his footwear and his foot. Races were run, records were set, ribbons were awarded. As it turned out, I got no ribbons, but Tommy Wade had a pretty good day, and in a belated and uncharacteristic wish to participate in that field day, I'm here to tell the tale. They say it's all fun and games until somebody loses an eye, but I say it can still be fun and games after somebody loses a leg.
David Franks no longer maintains county roads or tunes pipe organs. He and his lovely wife live outside of Fayetteville, Arkansas, with their two-cat and two-car hoard. In our final story of the night here at Tales from the South, Vicky Penny may be doped up, but that doesn't keep her from understanding in Where There's Smoke.
The dentist deftly injected the anesthetic into my gum line with the skill of a professional. This was not his first rodeo. He rolled back in his chair, waiting for the numbness to take effect. He casually flipped through my chart. He is a young man in his early 30s with glistening, almost reflective, white, perfectly aligned teeth. So, on your chart, your occupation is listed as writer. What type of writing do you do? Well, some people consider it humor. The tingling began along my gums and jawline as the drug began to take its desired effect. I see. Have you ever written anything about dentistry? His voice as smooth as silk. No, I slurred. I never considered it funny. I have been forced to become accustomed to having younger and younger doctors. At one time, my rule for the perfect medical practitioner was to find one that was overweight and smoked. Seldom would the topics turn to the dreaded BMI or exercise regimes. The same held, too, for dental professions. Just find one without perfect teeth. An easy chore in my younger years, but orthodontics and improved dental techniques have changed all of that. In my preliminary exam, a dental assistant had commented that I must have once had braces. How could you tell? I asked. She showed me the x-ray and pointed to the certain missing teeth and other signs of the early orthodontic practices. Cave drawings, I said. Exactly, she replied. I had had braces before her mother was even born. Now, it was not going to be a fun morning. I gazed across the tray, eyeing all the sterile, shiny chrome tools of the trade. They lay in sharp contrast to the muted tones of the designer-selected wallpaper, paint, and coordinated furniture. The ambiance, all carefully crafted to give the patient, in this case me, the impression of a day spa. Gone were the stark white dental offices of my youth, each adorned with one obligatory penitentiary-style window. This is the new era in dental care, none of which put me any more at ease. I am at the age where my teeth are trying to abandon ship. On this day, two mutineer molars will be made to stay on board and meet the terms of indentured servitude for many more years. Soon, the dental assistant and dentist planted themselves to my left and right, my chair reclined, and the work began. Now, with all the world's technological advances, from HD televisions to smartphones with apps for that, whatever that is, why haven't sound-canceling devices been successfully deployed in dental offices? I mean, it seems like a natural fit. So instead, I thought pleasant thoughts and tried to relax to the high-pitched whirring of the drill. We're about 10 minutes in on my procedure when the assistant said, "Do you smell something burning?" Now, with all the calm of the psychotherapist, the dentist responded with a reassuring, "No," and continued to grind. Moments later, he removed the implement from my mouth and casually said, "I think you need a little more anesthetic." Weird, I thought. I wasn't feeling anything. He injected a little more and added, "We were taking a short break for that to set in." Next, I watched as the doctor hurriedly carried a ladder down the hall outside my room, and the rest of his staff gathered in an attempt to track down the burning smell. The smell dissipated. No smoke, no fire. The consensus held that it was probably just a bad ballast in one of the light fixtures. And then one of the staff suggested a casual call to the fire department using the non-emergency number. They could come out and take a look around, she said. The dentist and the rest of the crew agreed, and a few more minutes passed as the assistant and dentist settled in and got back to work on my now very numb mouth. I heard the faint sound of sirens over in the grinding, and it sounded as though it was coming closer. Now, the office is located on a busy street, and the burning, smoky smell was gone, so the sound didn't worry me, and no one else in the room seemed to notice. That is until two huge firemen burst into the building, fully clad in yellow fire suits, helmets with breathing devices attached, heavy boots, and carrying axes. "We got a call," one of them said matter-of-factly, their heavy gear clanking as they came to a stop in the hallway. The comment was directed toward the very startled dentist. A brief, awkward silence ensued as everyone exchanged glances. Slowly, the dentist removed his hands from my mouth and said, "I think you need a little more numbing." and injected a little more. Now, we'll take a short break and let that kick in. He and the assistant then disappeared with the fireman. I heard the extension and collapsing of ladders as the fireman began removing ceiling tiles and inspecting wiring. Again, no smoke, no fire. With the inspection completed and the disappointed fireman escorted out, the dentist proceeded with my treatment. At this point, he could have used chisels and a sledgehammer. I wasn't feeling a thing. The procedure initially slated for 1 hour had become a 3 hour event. Finally done, the dentist sat writing on my chart. As he scribbled his notes, he said, "So, you sure were calm through that fire scare." "Wait, are you going to write about this?" "Oh yes," I drooled. "Oh yeah." Now, for the record, the numbness wore off completely 6 hours later.
Vicki Taylor Penny and her family live in Northwest Arkansas, where she enjoys sharing stories with her family and friends. So how about our stories and storytellers tonight? Thank you to all of our writers. Thank you to our live audience here at the Main Stage Creative Community Center in downtown Eureka Springs, Arkansas. And thank you to UALR Public Radio. Tales from the South is presented by William F. Lehman Public Library. And our official media sponsor is AY Magazine, Arkansas's leading lifestyle publication at aymag.com. Additional support provided by the Writers Colony at Derry Hollow, UALR's Department of Rhetoric and Writing, the North Little Rock Visitors Bureau, and the Oxford American, the Southern Magazine of Good Writing. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Stitcher Smart Radio, and you can download and listen to our podcast on our website. More can be found at talesfromthesouth.com. Have a great night, and we'll see you next week for another edition of Tales from the South. Good night, everybody.
I'm from West Texas. And I grew up around pump jacks and rattlesnakes. My granddad was an old cowboy, so I just kind of wrote this one thinking about him. Old pump jack ain't pumping jack. Bad eyed cow, coyote track. Bad eyed cow tried to get some shade. Got caught up in a pump jack wave. Didn't blow it on his back. Old Pump Jack ain't pumping jack. Barbed wire fence needs rebuild. Windmill's broke and it's standing still. Windmill needs three new blades. Almost stepped on a rattlesnake. Barbed wire fence, blood and sweat. Ain't found that coyote yet. Didn't load it on his back. Old Pump Jack ain't pumping jack. On his land, rattlesnake den in a cat claw tree.
and granddaddy don't bother me. Rattlesnake strike, I should have been dead. Great granddaddy cut off his head, didn't blow it on his back. Old Pump Jack ain't bumping jack. When I was a young boy, I won't say it. Gonna play my guitar till I'm dead. Your mama, she cried, and daddy said, son, you ever see the devil, better turn and run. Your mama, she cried, and daddy said, son, ever see the devil, better turn and run. Dead and loaded on his back, old Punk Jack ain't pumping jack.
Live sound and studio assistance provided by Infrared Studio in North Little Rock. More at InfraredStudioProductions.com. You too can experience Tales in person as a member of our live audience. We're now traveling throughout Arkansas and the South, bringing Tales to your community. Details on hosting a live show, our schedule, and ticket information can be found at our website, TalesFromTheSouth.com. Thanks for helping keep the art of Southern-style storytelling alive, and we'll see you next week on Tales from the South.